ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं दधाति स्वप्ने। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं सग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवम् सद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदानुसहगणा श्रीललिता श्रीविशाखावितंश्च। हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धुजगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोस्तुते। तप्तकञ्चन गौराङ्गी श्रीराधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुदेवी प्रणामामि हरिः। वंचकल्पतरूपस्य कृपासिन्धुभ्यो च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाश्रति गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 11, Chapter 20, right? Yes. Text 7, Pure Devotional Service. Today is also the appearance day of Sita Devi, appearance day of Janau Mata, and disappearance of Madhu Pandit. So we all have to cover everything plus the Srimad Bhagavatam class in 45 minutes. I will try my best. And we have Vrinda is coming to talk about Sita Devi. As you know, she has written the two books, Sita's Fire. She has received award. She has done a lot of research on it. So I'm going to have her come and talk about Sita Devi. I will just talk something from Srimad Bhagavatam. She is here. Srimad Bhagavatam, and also about Janava Mata and disappearance day of Madhu Pandit. Okay, so let's start with Srimad Bhagavatam, text 7. Nirvinanam Jnana Yogo Nyasinameha Karmasu Teshva Nirvina Chittanam Karma Yoga Stukaminam Nirvinanam Jnana Yogo Nyasinameha Karmasu Teshva Nirvina Vichittanam Karma Yoga Stukaminam Nirvinanam Jnana Yogo Nyasinameha Karmasu Teshva Nirvina Chittanam Karma Yoga Stukaminam. Thank you. Vaishnavis. Nirvinanam. Nirvinanam, for those who are disgusted. Gyan Yoga, the path of philosophical speculation. Nyasinam, for those who are renounced. Iha, among these three paths. Karmasu, inordinate material activities. Teshu, in those activities. Anirvina, not disgusted. Chittanam, for those who have consciousness. Karma Yoga, the path of Karma Yoga. To, indeed. Kaminam, for those who still desire material happiness. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Among these three paths, Jnana Yoga, the path of philosophical speculation, is recommended for those who are disgusted with material life and are thus detached from ordinary fruitive activities. Those who are not disgusted with material life, having many desires yet to fulfill, should seek perfection through the path of Karma Yoga. Purport. In this verse, the Lord reveals the different propensities that led human beings to adopt different processes of perfection. Those who are frustrated in ordinary material life of society, friendship and love, and who understand that promotion to heavenly heaven simply brings further domestic miseries, take directly the path of knowledge. Through authorized philosophical discrimination, they transcend the bonds of material existence. Those who are still desirous of enjoying material society, friendship and love, and who are excited by the prospect of going with their relatives to material heavenly planets, cannot take directly the path of rigorous philosophical advancement, which requires great austerity. Such persons are advised to remain in family life and offer the fruits of their work to the Supreme. In this way, they also can become perfect and gradually learn detachment from material life. So, yoga means connecting with the Lord, connecting with the Supreme. So all here, this section is going, ultimately, it's going to come to Bhakti Yoga, but it's Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtang Yoga, and ultimately come to Bhakti Yoga. Now, yoga means connecting with the Supreme, means whether it's a Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, but still is connecting with the Supreme. That's what yoga means, and that's what Karma Yoga is. So, the beauty about this Vedic culture is that it has a place for everybody. If you want to be a karma yogi, fine, you can be a karma yogi. But yoga means you give the results of the fruits of your activities. That's what yoga means, to connect with the Supreme. So give the results of your fruits of activities to the Lord, offer to the Lord. That is karma yogi. So, when we have connection with the Lord, means there is a reciprocation. And connection with the Lord means there is affection, there is a love. We offer someone something out of affection and love. So karma yoga is the process which is you give something, you offer to the Lord, some reciprocation is there between you and the Lord. And it's a gradual process, and of course you perform the karma yoga, but at the same time there is still the attachment is there sometimes with the families and relatives and position and all that. So it's a gradual process. So you continue karma yoga process. But the one thing is that when you are in yoga, karma yoga, you are going to connect with the Lord, and Lord is going to give you a path, because there will be, Lord will revive the love, which is dormant love within you. His Lord is going to revive that love in you. Now sometimes in the process of the karma yoga also, because the contamination is there, sometimes we attach to some other, we expect something even from the Lord. I was talking to one student in Tampa this weekend. She's from Hyderabad, and they live in Tampa, which we do the program there nicely. Good congregation, very enthusiastic. And near the Hyderabad, there is a temple of, beside Balaji temple that is in Tirupati, but there is another temple 2 hours away. And she said that we all go to this temple before we're going to get the visa to come to the United States. Everybody goes there to perform they do the parikrama of the temple for 11 times. And to perform the parikrama of the 11th time, you have to wait in the line. She said, there are thousands of people, and here we can do parikrama so many times around our temple, right? There, to perform 11th time, you have to wait in the line. So many people. And then after, she said, definitely we get the result. It is like a tradition. And then after you get the result, then you perform, make sure you perform 108 times parikrama of that temple. So this is, it's a material benefit. But still, it's a Vishnu temple, so Vishnu, we know that Krishna, if to worship the Krishna, Krishna is going to fulfill your desire, but at the same time Krishna is going to bring you closer, Krishna is going to bring them closer to Him. It's a matter of time. While with demigods is something else. Okay. And because Krishna is going to bring them closer. It's a matter of time. That's the beauty about Krishna. And in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya had made this process so simple by chanting Hare Krishna and come closer to Krishna. And why Srila Prabhupada wanted us to distribute the books? Srila Prabhupada in one place he says that I want all the Americans, people, I want the books in all the people in America. He said that. Why? Because his goal was to bring everybody closer to Krishna, at the lotus feet of Krishna. And when they will read the book, they will understand what the yoga means. Yoga is not something for gymnastic, but something to bring closer to Krishna, being at the lotus feet of Krishna. And when they will read the books, then they will get the true knowledge, And they will start chanting Hare Krishna, which is the highest process, Bhakti Yoga. That is the process of Bhakti Yoga in the age of Kali, is chanting the holy name. So when the people will chant holy name, they will come closer to Krishna. Automatically they will come. When they chant holy name, their devotional service already started. When they have a Krishna prasadam, their devotional service is already started. It's a matter of time. It's a matter of time. And that is it glorious that all our youth are, you know, doing the programs in the yoga studios. That's the beauty about it. They don't get much money, make much money, but they go on. And they are becoming, our young youth are doing the programs of the yoga, and they are really, they by hearing, people hearing them, because they have that energy, the youth have that energy and that power, that people are reciprocating, people are chanting and dancing. So their devotional service is already started. See, that's the beauty about it. About Krishna consciousness. So it is when in this verse when it mentioned about philosophical speculation, and I was a little bit, I couldn't follow that. I said speculation, because in the material world we speculate. When I'm going to do the business, I'm going to speculate that I'm going to make some much money. In the future. That's why I invest the money in the business. Right? So when the word came speculation, I was thinking, even in the bhakti there is a philosophical speculation. But then in the Prana Govinda Prabhu opened my eyes and he said, read the 14th chapter text 1. And it is said, Srila Prabhupada is saying that in that first verse that philosophical speculation is going to bring you, please read this chapter, Srila Prabhupada says, with understanding philosophical speculation, I cannot rephrase exactly, philosophical speculation will bring you to the devotional service. So philosophical speculation means how? How is this happening? To satisfy the intelligent. Because intelligent people are going to ask a lot of questions. So that's what finally, how, why. But that's going to bring you closer, in the positive sense, to bring us closer to Krishna. Okay, so I'm just going to go straight to the, because I have to talk about Janava Mata. It's a nice pastime. About Jana Mata and then Madhu Pandit, and then we have to talk about Sita Devi, and then we can take some questions. Is that okay? Is that okay, everybody? Okay, so Janava Mata ki jai ho. Okay. It takes a long time because she said, so I asked her that, can you go at night? She said, yeah, sometimes night there are not many people, but our temple open until 12 midnight, so you know, people are there. And it's like a tradition. Yeah. So Janava Mata was the daughter of Suryadas Sarkhela. There were two daughters. He had two daughters. One was the Janava Mata and one was Vasudha. Vasudha and Angar was Janava Mata, Sri Janavi. And their father was very devoted, the worshipper of Sri Gaurang Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda. And he had a dream. And in a dream, he was so staunch devotee of Lord Gauranga and Nityananda that he had a dream that I should have my daughters married to Nityananda. Nityananda came in the dream to her and to him. And when he woke up, he saw the dream. He realized that because he had heard the glories of Lord Nityananda, so he wanted to offer both his daughter to Lord Nityananda. And so he sent the Brahmana as a, to send Brahmana to talk with Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda was in Gaurudesh. I'm not going to go through whole details about her traveling here, going to Vrindavan, coming back, and all this, whole long pastimes. But the main point was that Nityananda accepted both of them. So Vasudha and Sri Janava both were married to Lord Nityananda. And here it is mentioned that Janava Mata is the now Vasudha had the son and the daughter, and one is the Virbhadra, but Janava Mata had no son or daughter. She had no son or daughter. And she is the Janava Mata is the reservoir of Prema Bhakti and is known as Nityananda Swarupini, the other self of Nityananda Prabhu. She delivered many sinners and atheists by her mercy. Her divine opulence and sweetness are both astounding. And I'm just going to read the, of course you all know Janava Baithak, at the, when you go to do the Govardhan Parikrama on the bank of the Radhakund, Janava Baithak is there, where she stayed there and she used to chant so many rounds. There is a special path for her, there is a special to go the first steps to for her to go take a bath. As you go, you can see her Janava Baithak. There is a steps for her to go down and take a bath in the Radhakund. But I'm going to read the nice Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers to Janava Mata. And this is in his Kalyan Kalpataru. He's praying as follows at the lotus feet of Sri Janava Mata. It's a nice prayer. This is by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Having fallen into the ocean of mercy, my life is bewilderment, and I do not know how to reach its shore, nor even where to search for it. All my efforts, karma, are useless. All my knowledge, jnana, is useless. As are mysticism, yoga, austerity, religious penance, and mundane piety. None of these processes have any power to rescue me. I am weak, helpless. I don't know how to swim across this ocean of ignorance. Who will deliver me from this dangerous predicament? Within this dangerous ocean of material existence, I see the crocodiles of sense gratification. What is terrible sight. Within this ocean, I am tossed about by the turbulent waves which constantly boil and churn like a ship without a rudder. Rudder? Right? R-U-D-D-E-R? Rudder. The impulses, energies that I have acquired from my previous births are like a wind that blows the ship in all directions. My mind is unsteady. The ship has no captain, no direction. I weep in despair, seeing that I cannot cross this ocean of misery. O Janava Devi, I cannot. O Janava Devi, today by the power of your divine qualities, be merciful to this servant of yours. Dispel this illusion which torments me and relieve me of the anguish of material existence. Let me take shelter at your lotus feet, for in this way I shall certainly cross over the ocean of birth and death. You are Nityananda Shakti, the divine energy of Nityananda himself. You are the guru of Krishna Bhakti, Be merciful to me and grant me the shade of your lotus, holy lotus feet, which are like a wish-fulfilling tree. You have delivered countless abominable sinners. Please deliver me in the same way. Today, this lowly sinner falls at your holy feet, praying for your mercy. Okay. This is the prayer of Janava Mata. Now we are to talk about Madhu Pandit, not the Madhu Pandit from. When I went on the Google, I put Madhu Pandit, and Madhu Pandit came from the Bangalore. So I said, where am I going to find it? Anyhow, then I found it. So, Madhu Pandit, it's a disappearance day. And it's said that there is, he is not mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, only it is mentioned in Bhakti Ratnakar that Sri Gopinathji manifested himself before him. And there is a prayer here. O Srinivas, what more can I say? The Lord reveals Himself to His pure devotee, who then preaches His glories to the world. Who can describe their incomprehensible activities by which the Lord becomes subservient to their love? Thus did Sri Vrajendra Kumar reveal Himself to Paramananda Bhattacharya and Sri Madhu Pandit, who is the abode of many wonderful activities. Thus has Sri Gopinath, who is an ocean of mercy, and who sports on the enchanting, beautiful banks of Vamsivat, become manifested by the grace of Sri Madhu Pandit. And as you know, at the Vamsi, the deity of Gopinath was discovered at Vamsivat by Paramananda Bhattacharya, who entrusted the deity's worship to Madhu Pandit. On the altar in this temple are deities of Gopinath, Srimati Radharani, and her sister Anang Manjari. Madhu Pandit arranged to have this temple built. Vajranath, the great grandson of Krishna, originally installed Gopinath in Vrindavan. When the Muslims raided Vrindavan in 1670, the original Gopinath deity was taken to Jaipur. The Gopinath deity in Jaipur is said to be exactly resemble Lord Krishna from the shoulders down to the waist. And there is a story about this temple. There she, Janava Devi, the wife of Nityananda, came to Vrindavan, and she came to the evening aarti at Radha Gopinath temple. Suddenly, Gopinath jumped off the altar and took Janava Devi on the altar and closed the curtains. When the assembled Vaishnavas opened the curtain, Janava Devi was gone and Gopinath was standing on the altar. Later, the deity of Anang Manjari, the younger sister of Radharani, was installed on the altar here. Janava Devi is Anang Manjari in Krishna's pastimes. Normally, Radharani is to the left of Sri Krishna. In this temple, Radharani is to the right of Krishna and Anang Manjari is placed on the left. Deities of Lalita and Visakha are also on the altar, along with the deity of Lord Chaitanya. Okay, so Sri Srila Gopinath, who originated the transcendental mellows of the Ras dance, stands on the shore in the Vamsivat and attracts the attention of cowherd damsels with the sound of his celebrated flute. May they all confer upon us their benediction. There is more to talk about the Madhu Pandit, but I'm going to hand over now to Vrinda Devi to talk about Sita. Do you want to sit here? Want to sit down? Okay. Someone want to offer her a garland, please? It is appropriate, I think, she has done so much research, she has received awards, it's appropriate that she can talk about Sita Devi than myself. You have to sit here. She should sit under the asana here. I should get out, isn't it? Yeah.
Aibo. So, of course, my only qualification to speak here in front of all of you is because my father-in-law kindly requested me to do so, with the blessing of my parents also. So, in the Ramayana, when you look at, you know, Sita, of course, is the main female character of the Ramayana. She's the heroine. She's, you know, the main female there. But if you count in the Ramayana how often Sita appears in, you know, if you count all the Sanskrit shlokas, she only appears in about 10% of the text itself. So we can see that that there is an underrepresentation of, you know, kind of the female perspective, and that was a lot of my inspiration to take up the work of kind of excavating them more. But because it is her appearance day, I thought it would be really nice to hear from her directly, because there are certain instances where she speaks. So I'm going to read from the main kanda, the Sundara kanda, is where we hear a lot from her when she's in captivity, and there's this delightful defiance she shows to Ravan. She really gives him some nice insults and, you know, shows that she's, you know, not intimidated by him, and, you know, but that's a long section, so I didn't want to read that. So I'm going to read from the Aranya kanda when they're in the forest. It's the first 10 years of exile. As her husband, the delight of the Raghus, was setting forth, Vaidehi addressed him in an affectionate tone of voice. And this I'm reading from Valmiki Ramayana, which of course Prabhupada says is the authoritative version. So, Vaidehi addressed him in an affectionate tone of voice. Acquiring great righteousness requires the greatest care, and only he who avoids deliberate misdeeds can gain it in this world. As for deliberate misdeeds, there are just three. Telling lies and dishonesty is bad enough. But the other two, sexual intercourse with another man's wife and unprovoked violence, are even worse. You have never been, nor will you ever be, guilty of telling lies, Raghava. And how could you possibly lust after the wife of another man, an act that destroys righteousness? Both of these misdeeds can be avoided by those who have mastered their senses, and I know you control your senses completely, my handsome husband. But the third one, violence, the taking of life without provocation and recklessly, to this you may be prone. You have promised to slay the Rakshasas in combat, my mighty husband, in order to protect the seers who live in Dandaka. And to this end you have set forth to the forest in company with your brother, armed with bow and arrows. As I watch you setting out, my mind grows sick with worry, though thinking about your deeds usually brings me the greatest happiness, for I disapprove, my mighty husband, of going to Dandaka, and I shall explain the reason why. Just hear what I have to say. You and your brother are going to the forest, bow and arrow in hand, and I fear the sight of any forest dweller might cause you to shoot your arrows. For in this world, a bow to a kshatriya is kindling to a fire. If it comes too close, his blazing power flares up wildly. Only because I love you and respect you am I reminding you, not teaching you, that on no account should you take up your bow and unprovoked turn your thoughts to killing the Rakshasas of Dandaka. My mighty husband, I disapprove of your killing creatures that have done no wrong. Mighty kshatriyas finding themselves in the forest, inhabited by men who practice self-restraint, need bows only for protecting those in distress. How incongruous they are, weapons in the forest, the Kshatriya order and the practice of asceticism. It is all so at odds. We must respect the customs of the place. Wicked thoughts, my noble husband, can come from the handling of weapons. From righteousness comes material wealth. From righteousness comes happiness. Through righteousness one gains everything. The very essence of this world is righteousness. But righteousness belongs only to the vigilant, those who relentlessly control themselves by various acts of self-restraint. No, true happiness is not easily won. Remaining ever pure of heart, dear husband, follow the ways of righteousness appropriate to this time. But then, you already know all this, this and the whole universe as it is in truth. Only a woman's intuition made me speak this way, for who could presume to tell you what righteousness is? But still, give it careful thought, you and your younger brother, and do without delay whatever you think is best. Ram listened to the words that Vaidehi, princess of Mithila, spoke in her devotion to her husband, and then he replied with firm adherence to righteousness, "This is sound advice, my lady." You know, sometimes when we read, you know, ancient Shastras or even the Ramayana, we can sometimes wonder, how does it apply to this time and place? And I think right now there is that hot topic of the Second Amendment rights and, you know, should we all have our weapons? And so I thought it, her thoughts on this is something we can take into consideration. And, you know, so in the story itself, it just happens just the way I, you know, presented it. It talks about, you know, Ram making this vow to the ascetics and like that. And then, you know, without further ado, suddenly Sita is talking. We don't really, you know, we're not privy to her inner thoughts and motivations. Why is she suddenly speaking like this? Why does she care about this? And like that. So that was really a main meditation for me, to be with the personalities as they have these moments of discovery and like that. So I'm going to actually read the same section for you so that, you know, yeah, I just thought it'd be interesting to see. Now we have read the source text, and then what did I do with that in my writing process? So I'm going to read that to you. Short excerpt from Queen of Elements, the second book in the Sita Fire trilogy. Yes, today also happens to be my birthday. So chapter 16, Sita and Ganga's Blessing. As my protectors came alive with their appointed task, I had to find other ways to occupy my time. I felt little interest in their nightly adventures, how many blood drinkers they had killed, or how. They, on the other hand, had a need to speak about it, much as they would have relived glorious battles were we in Ayodhya. Even though they were rarely wounded, I know what they were doing was dangerous. I had seen them up against Viradha and knew now how violent it was, how close to death. I understood their need to recount those tense moments savoring their victory in order to be fresh and free for the next night's attack. When Ram and Lakshman were not speaking of previous killings, I found them planning future ones. So I withdrew to my own sphere, turning my attention to the many wonders of sage Sharabanga's ashram. I was upset with my husband, but did not know how to articulate my feelings. I had made many new friends in Dandaka. Even Sharabanga's milking cow followed me, the bell around her neck jingling. Sometimes she mooed in my ear until I massaged her neck with firm strokes. She always returned the favor by licking my cheeks with her raspy tongue, which tickled so frightfully it was hard to bear. Other creatures found me too, parrots, sparrows, squirrels, monkeys, and of course, deer. So I was never alone. One place I stumbled upon like a secret was a kund, a sacred pond encircled by a man-made enclosure of stone, built like an altar, a place one could go to cleanse one's mind or body. Sharabhanga told me it was Ganga's kund, filled with her holy water. So I walked down the steps of the kund and sprinkled the holy water on my head. I stepped into the water, fully clothed, venturing to the last step of the staircase, submerged up to my neck. This confounded my animal friends, who loved to sip the water but not bathe in it. Two little birds perched on top of my head. The flock of birds that had trailed me settled on the stones around the kund. I stood like that for a long time, feeling the water with my hands. Suddenly, the serene waters began to ripple against my feet. First, I thought it was a swarm of fish, but the current became stronger and moved up my body until I saw the whole kund swirling like a river. The birds flew up, startled by the sudden commotion. The water parted and revealed the face of a huge crocodile. Its snout and black eyes emerged first, and I quickly moved up the stairs and out of the water. I was more astonished than frightened. White foam splashed up as the crocodile emerged fully, but my eyes no longer saw it. Instead, I was spellbound by the rider of the crocodile, a goddess, draped in white and holding a golden pot in her hand. Because I had seen the vision of her in my mind, I was not shocked, but without words I knew who she was, for who could it be but Ganga herself? I was astounded at seeing the words of the scriptures come alive. She was the mistress of crocodiles, draped in white, and her appearance alone granted the beholder peace and prosperity. Ganga sat perfectly motionless on the titanic crocodile, looking at me with her deep blue stormy eyes. Her flowing dress was no different than the white swirls of water. Her large eyes, the color of deep waters, looked at me with endless benevolence, and then she spoke. You must not be afraid to speak your feelings, for your words are wise, and a woman's words are like liquid honey to a man's heart. He needs them to live. If he rejects them, he will dry up and become rigid. Too many hard hearts have sought my waters for absolution. I, who am a woman, I, who whisper into their hearts, I give them the words of love they need and make them whole again. Unknowingly, I had put my hand over my heart to protect it from her words. No, princess of the earth, she said, do not ever fear to speak your heart. Your words are good and true. Your wisdom is golden. The truth you see is not innate to man, for he rules the world with a sword and does not like his hand to be stayed. Trust your heart and share your wisdom. Then she disappeared into the kund as swiftly as she had come, but I knew that a gentle thought would bring her back to me and the courage she had given me. A small pool of water trickled down my forehead from her blessing. I was more astonished at her blessing than at her appearance itself. How had she known when I had not? Lately, my heart had felt troubled. I couldn't have said why, but now I knew. I was withholding a part from it from Ram. Words I longed to say but couldn't, fearful of his response. I knew that confronting a man about his actions was a perilous thing to do. Ram had never, not even once, turned his anger on me or spoken to me in a harsh manner. Then why was I afraid? I was afraid because I had seen Ram's anger when he shot down the forest animals, and it frightened me. Because I loved him so completely, I couldn't bear his displeasure. Even in its restrained form, Ram's anger burned ice cold. I feared my words might push him away, and he might turn that anger on me. I relied on his love to sustain me, to make sense of my existence in this world. Without it, I would perish. Fortified by Ganga's encouragement, however, I resolved to open my heart to my beloved. Now that my feelings were no longer hidden from me, it would be deception to hide them from Ram. I had to gather my courage. When I returned to the ashram, I saw Ram at a distance, sharpening arrows as he and his brother often did these days. I knew why it had to be done, yet the stone remained in my heart. Here was the cause of my withheld anger. As I approached, Ram looked up and our eyes met. The coldness in my heart disappeared. I blushed from his attentive gaze, but was also aware of the frightened throbbing in my heart. If Ganga had not blessed me, I would have not found the courage. Ram and Lakshman called me brave, praising my adjustment to the forest and the way I handled dangers, even Virata's attempt to abduct me. In all those instances, however, I had been seamlessly united with Ram. The place I was about to venture to, I would no longer be by his side, but in front of him, confronting him. I wanted to find my long-forgotten veil from Ayodhya and hide myself in it. "What is it, Sita?" Ram asked, perceptive as always. I could dissemble no longer. When I spoke, my words were deliberate. Unknowingly, I had labored on them for some time. "Ram, no one knows the path of Dharma better than you. Your valor is exemplary, and your vow to protect the holy ones befits you." I paused. The easy words had been said. "Go on, my love," he said. "When I see you like this," I motion to the pile of arrows, "I feel uneasy at heart. You and Lakshman speak of little else than slaying blood drinkers. Holding a weapon provokes violence. Any person, whether a king or a common man, will feel an increased urge to kill, having weapons at hand. But violence breeds only violence. There is no end to it. It is not my place to instruct you, who are not only a trained warrior, but whose knowledge of Dharma is far greater than mine. And yet, I have witnessed your actions, Ram, and my heart is not at peace. I do not feel the rightness of your actions now. Whose thirst for blood will be slaked first, theirs or ours?" I pressed my hand to my lips. Ram did not respond immediately. I carefully looked at my beloved's face to gauge his temperament. He looked at the ground, deep in thought, his features grave. Finally, he said, "I didn't realize that my actions troubled you. Though you're pointing out a fault in me, I accept your words because I know you love me, and I don't take your caution as criticism. Your concern is well-founded. My vow to the Holy Ones has given me a purpose, however. It gives me a reason for the exile to use my skills as a warrior to defend them. My bow must be my constant companion. I cannot put away my weapons and lead the life of a true ascetic, but I can assure you that I will not turn my arrows on harmless animals that are innocent. I will keep your words close to my heart and examine my motives as I place my arrows against my bow." Ram clasped my hand. Together we sat side by side in silence. The demands life made on us and on every human being destroyed perfect choices. Even Ram had to compromise his values. This would become all too clear as later events unfolded. Sita Devi ki.
Thank you.
Baba, you want to open for questions and comments? If you have any questions for me. The first one I read, this is Valmiki Ramayana, so the first I was just reading from the Valmiki, and the second part I read, that was from my book, yes, Queen of Elements. I think your wife has them, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
Few typical questions can I be
I think, you know, ever since, you know, Valmiki is the oldest written version of the oral tradition, I think since then every version of the Ramayana has come out, they have tried to tackle that. So of course I've also tried to add some thought, but ultimately I don't think that I haven't discovered answers. I have added, you know, kind of my thoughts and feelings on the topic. And yes, it is very painful. I think, you know, even when her chastity was questioned in the Ramayana itself, everyone was hurt. You know, when she's about to go into the fire, there, all the vanaras, all the monkeys, they're like, no, 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 what is happening? This cannot be happening. This is too painful. So even as it was happening, it was very painful, and I think that's part of the lesson. It's not like, oh, this is a good thing to do. This is how we should treat women. It was like, this is unbearable. This is not right. And that kind of like feeling of righteous anger, it's still here in our hearts. So I think that for me is what I've taken away. Like, there's this anger. Like, this is not right. We shouldn't be treating women this way. So that's kind of my conclusion on it.
Prabhupada's commentary, Bhagavatam, makes it more complete to me, just me, because I can't understand Bhagavatam every topics. So Prabhupada makes it dilute in a sense I can digest and give a reference. Similarly, some commentary of Valmiki Ramayana is necessary. You probably met Mother Janava Nanda Vishwa Prabhu's wife.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Alachua. She told me personally that one time she was at the door where Prabhupada says, I want to translate the next book. Did she tell you that? No? She told me that in the shop. So she was poking just to hear what Prabhupada said, I want to do Ramayana.
Mm.
And he gave a commentary, a little bit, why it is so attractive to him. Of course, Krishna has his plan, Prabhupada left, otherwise he wanted to translate the Ramayana. So it's very important. Thank you for doing this book.
Fortunately, we had a Prabhupada disciple bring a telegram with Sita Ram and Lakshman and Hanuman to us. You know, and I was really so glad she did that. So anyway, I want to purchase one of your books.
They're available on Amazon.
Oh, they're on Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay, can you write the name down and everything?
If you Google Sita's Fire, that's easy to remember. You can find it on Amazon and also my website, sitasfire.com. So you can, you know, find more about us there.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. And since it's my birthday, I would take the liberty of asking for your blessings that I can, you know, I grew up on Prabhupada's books, but there are statements that are very difficult for me to understand, and I know all of you have been working with these books all your life, and if you could bless me that I can come to resolution and harmony with it. I would really like those blessings from all of you.
May we begin all 10-1 now. Okay.